The title of this Esther talk is If I Perish, I Perish. And I'd like to start by telling a little story. In Cambodia, during the war, there was a little boy that ran in to the Army Field Hospital carrying his sister who was bleeding to death. And she was going to need a transfusion. It was obvious. So they checked her blood type real fast, and it was a rare blood type. And so they checked the kids, her brother's blood type, and it was a match. And so they said, now he didn't speak English, so they got a local, and you know, would you give your blood for your sister? And he thought about it for a second, and he says, yes, he will. And so they hooked him up with the IV, and he's on the couch thing where they draw the blood. And then they're giving it to his sister, and the color starts coming back in her face, and the little boy's smiling. And then all of a sudden he started sobbing and crying uncontrollably, and they said, no, it's going to be okay. You know, she's going to be okay. Well, they couldn't communicate, so they got a local again, and they said, ask him, what, you know, is he in pain? What's the deal here? And the little boy, there's talking back and forth in their language. And then she turns around, and the nurse is like, what is it? And she says, he asked me how long until I die. He thought he had to give all of his blood for his sister, and he was willing to make that sacrifice. And Esther was willing to make the sacrifice. See, she put her life on the line for her family, for her people, the Jews. And what a lesson of courage and sacrifice for her, for her family, for her people, the Jews. Dear Esther, another ancient worthy. And she was ready to lay down her life in order that the Jews may not die according to Haman's devilish plan. Now, interestingly, Haman was an Agagite because his mother escaped. She was pregnant. Haman was her child. So it's kind of interesting. Brother Harry was talking about the Agagites. Well, so there's so many lessons wrapped up in the historical account given in the book of Esther. And lessons of the Lord's providences for his people, lessons of sacrifice, lessons of courage, the lesson that the Lord did not despise the Jews that did not go back to Jerusalem in time of Cyrus's decree, but the lesson of God's mercy and patience on us in our lack of appreciation of the gifts and benefits for us. That's a pretty powerful thing. Oh, and by the way, Sister Kathy caught a mistake I made in the first, the Rebecca talk. I said it was the time of the Medo-Persians. It's Esther. I flip back and forth between, because they're a type of the church, Esther, Rebecca, the plan, you know, us, you know. And this is during the Medo-Persia. Of course, Rebecca was way back when. Okay, so lessons for Esther, we learn a lesson of personal accountability, a lesson of tact when dealing with life's situations, a lesson of not casting our pearls before swine. Remember, Esther did not tell her captors that she was a Jew, or they may turn and rend her. Lesson of faithfulness under duress. Lessons that God loves irony. Haman builds a gallows to hang Mordecai. He ends up getting hung on his own gallows. Asked, how would you honor a man? He tells the king, and then he has to take Mordecai, who he hates, and honor him the way that he thought, you know, irony. The lesson of being content with the lot that the Lord has for you. You know, Esther would have rather gone back to the promised land, but that's not where she grew up. But she was still faithful. And so, now, y'all have a handout? Anybody not have a handout? Okay. Let's go through this real quick. We're going to break the code again here real quick so we know what we're talking about. Xerxes, also known as Ahasuerus, is a type of Christ. And one quick thing, you know, every feature of a person's life is not a lesson. You know, Xerxes was a pretty brutal dictator in history. And so just draw an X through that. There's two X's in Xerxes. And the other X is that he's a type of Christ. Just think of the cross, okay? Esther, also known as Hadassah, her Hebrew name, typifies the church. Mordecai typifies the ancient worthies. Haman represents Satan. Haman's 10 sons, the vestiges of Christendom, 10 kingdoms, 10 toes. The third day typifies the third 1,000-year day, the fifth, sixth, 7,000-year day. Silver, truth. Or if it's Haman's silver, it's error, packaged as truth. Esther's seven servants, the seven messengers to the church. Queen Vashti is an example of Solomon's pig. Seventh, just to see if you're awake. A little laugh here. Okay. Seventh year of King Xerxes' reign typifies 7 years into the Christ reign, 1874 plus 70 equals 1881. Crown, when Esther was crowned queen, typifies the glorification of the sleeping saints, we believe, in 1878, which, notice, was before 1881. The mourning, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G, the mourning time in sackcloth and ashes, types the 1845 years disfavor to the Jews from 33 A.D. to 1878. Esther having a royal position for a time like this, we think, typifies the 1878, the raising of the sleeping saints, the royal, at the 1878 time of the return of favor to the Jews. So a royal position for a time like this. What time is that? 1878. If I perish, I perish, we think typifies Esther's, the fact that the Esther class is at risk of second death until going beyond the veil. Half the kingdom, we think, is the earthly phase of the kingdom. You have a spiritual phase and the earthly phase. Haman's house, we think, typifies the fallen humanity still under the Adamic curse. Royal garments that Mordecai got in, excuse me, in the highest official next to the king, we think, possibly points to the spiritual elevation of the ancient worthies after the little season, which the pastor speculated. Conversion of the Gentiles to Jews in Medo-Persia, we think, is typical of the conversion of the entire earth into Jews. Remember, Jesus said in John 4:22, salvation is of the Jews. So that's the code, and now we can read through this and we know what we're talking about. Esther, and please turn with me to Esther 1:1, and we're going to go. We had an hour to do one chapter in Genesis. We have 45 minutes to do 10 chapters in Esther, so we're going to have to move quickly. King Xerxes, also called Ahasuerus of Persia, who typified Christ, lived in the capital city of Susa and ruled 127 provinces from India to Ethiopia. During the third year of his rule, Xerxes gave a big dinner for all his officials and officers. The governors and leaders of the provinces were also invited. Even the commanders of the Persian and Median armies came. Now skip down to verse 7. The guests drank from gold cups. Each cup had a different design. The king was generous and said to them, drink all you want. Then he told his servants, keep their cups full. Verse 9, while the men were enjoying themselves, Queen Vashti gave the women a big dinner inside the royal palace. By the seventh day, King Xerxes felt happy because of so much wine, and he asked his servants to bring Vashti to him, and he wanted to show her off because she was beautiful. Well, the king's servants told Queen Vashti what he had said, and she refused to go. Apparently, she was very beautiful, but had an attitude. And this made Xerxes terribly angry. Now, Pastor Russell compared Vashti's demeanor to the suffragette movement. That was the time he lived in, a century ago. The suffragettes were throwing Molotov cocktails through storefront windows to accomplish their purpose. And it's kind of funny. The suffragettes, if you want to know how to spell it, it's S-U-F-F, rage, T-T-E-S. R-A-G-E-T-T-E-S. And Vashti is, Pastor contrasts her demeanor to Esther's charm, tact, purity, and love. And Vashti, to me, reminded me of Proverbs 11:22. A beautiful woman who acts foolishly is like a gold ring in the snout of a pig. Okay? So a woman who lacks discretion, beautiful woman lacks discretion, Solomon tells us here, is like a gold ring in the snout of a pig. So that's, you have permission to laugh at that point. Okay. Verse 14. The king called in the seven highest officials of Persia and Media. These men were very wise and understood all the laws and customs of the country. And the king always wanted to ask them what they thought in such matters. And he said, Queen Vashti refused. What does the law say I should do about it? And Memucan told the king and the officials, Your Majesty, Queen Vashti has not only embarrassed you, she's insulted your officials and everyone else in all the provinces. And the women in the kingdom are going to hear about this, and they're not going to respect their husbands. If Vashti doesn't obey her husband, why should we, they will say. Before this day is over, the wives of the officials of Persia and Media will find out what Vashti has done. And so they suggested that he basically write a law that would keep Queen Vashti from ever seeing him again. And he liked the idea, and he did it. And they also suggested to him that he would have his people go out and search for beautiful young virgins, Esther 2:2. And so he did that, put Haggai in charge of it. Now, verse 5, Esther 2:5. At this time, a Jew named Mordecai, and the pastor suggests that Mordecai typifies the ancient worthies, was living in Susa. And Mordecai raised Esther. He was her cousin, but he raised her like a father because her folks were gone. Verse 7, Mordecai had a very beautiful cousin named Esther, who typifies the church. Her Hebrew name was Hadassah. Raised her as a father after her father and mother were dead. And the king, back to Xerxes, ordered a search for beautiful virgins to be taken to him. Esther was his favorite from day one. He gave Esther plenty of food. And I thought, you know, Jesus gives us plenty of spiritual food, doesn't he? And he gave her 7 special servants. And I thought, that reminds me of the 7 special servants to the church, the 7 messengers, faithful servant, Pastor Russell, for us. He gave her the best rooms. What are the best rooms? I'm pulling out my laser pointer here. The best rooms were for Esther, the holy and the most holy, as compared to the camp and the court. Mordecai warned Esther not to tell anyone she was a Jew, and she obeyed him. And that reminds me of Jesus' warning, cast not your pearls before swine, or they may turn and hurt you. So she kept it to herself. Mordecai was anxious to see how Esther was getting along, so he hung out in front of the courtroom, or where she was. And now the young women that were rounded up, they went in for a year of beauty treatments, and I thought, holy cow, that's a long time. 6 months of this and 6 months of that, and pretty soon a gold ring. Okay, so then, but when it was time, the king would call him by name, and I thought, when he called Esther by name, that reminded me of the call of the new creation. Xerxes, this is Esther 2:15 and 16. Xerxes, a type of Christ, had been king for 7 years when it was Esther's turn to come to him in the 10th month. Well, the 7 years of his reign, like we said before, reminded me of when did Christ's reign begin? 1874 plus 7 equals 1881, when the Esther class, the church, was complete in number. If you add up the planes M and L, okay, right here, here's M, the spirit begotten plane, and L, the spirit birth. If you add these up here, for the first time, that sum total hit 144,000 in the year 1881. They were complete, you might say. Completely 144,000. Now, they weren't all beyond the veil yet, but the number was complete. Well, 10 signifies complete, and it was in the 10th month. 7th year of his reign, 1874 plus 7 is 1881. And I think the Lord is winking at us when he says 10th month, complete. 1881, complete. This is just what we thought. General call ceases, high calling goes on, but there with a replacement program, there's a death risk. You know, Esther was subject to death, as we're going to learn as we go down through the story. What do you mean death? Well, you make a consecration if you don't, you know, you could go into second death. So Esther is at risk of death, and we'll find that out as we get into the story. Okay, Xerxes liked Esther more than any of the other young women. He fell in love with her. He didn't just like her, he loved her, okay? Our Lord loves the church, doesn't he? He crowns her queen. Crowns her queen. Now, when were the Sleeping Saints raised? 1878. So she was crowned queen in 1878. Notice that's before 1881. Okay. Let me think here. The vast majority of the brethren are already beyond the veil. Okay, crowned her queen. Now, Mordecai, Esther 2:19. Mordecai typifies the ancient worthies. Now, by this time, he's a palace official. He's a scribe or something in King Xerxes' palace. He told Esther, never tell anyone that she was a Jew, and she didn't. Verse 21, Bigthana and Teresh are 2 men who guarded King Xerxes' rooms. They got angry. They decided to kill the king. Mordecai hears it because he's in the palace now. He's an official in there now. He hears about this and he tells Esther, hey, real quick, go tell King Xerxes what the scoop is, that they're trying to kill him. And they did. And they had an investigation and the two men were hanged. It was all written down in a record book. And King Xerxes watched while they wrote it down in the record book. Well, okay, so you're asking at this point, well, wait a second. If Mordecai types the ancient worthies and Xerxes typifies Christ and Esther typifies the church, how is it that Mordecai telling Esther, who then tells Xerxes and saving his life, how does that work in the type and the, or in the antitype, okay? Well, okay, the ancient worthies have this information they convey to us, the church, because we're studying the scriptures and all. But how does that save Jesus' life? Well, think about it. In Hebrews 11, which is about the ancient worthies, remember those women that received their loved ones raised to life again? In prospect, trusting in the resurrection. Do you believe in the resurrection of Jesus? Do you believe when you read Isaiah 53 that Jesus is going to die and be resurrected, that kind of thing? Well, sure. So don't we figuratively, doesn't that information from the ancient worthies, from the Old Testament, to us, the Esther class, save Jesus' life figuratively? Do you believe it? Do you hear it? Do you see it? Okay, so I think that's the same thing, like the women that received their loved ones raised to life again. Resurrection wasn't back then, but it's in prospect, in their mind's eye. They received them back to life again, and that's how we receive Jesus back to life again in our mind's eye. Of course, Jesus was resurrected back then, but you get the idea. Okay, that's what I think. Okay, Esther 3, verse 1. Later, King Xerxes promoted Haman, we think is a typifies Satan, and you'll find out why in a little bit here, to the highest position in the kingdom. And he was an Agagite. You know, when I read about Haman, here he hates Mordecai, and he not only wants to kill him, you know, but everyone that looks like you. You know, he wants to kill all the Jews, too. And that made me gag. And then I thought, you know, he's an Agagite. He's from the tribe of Agag, and I thought, well, that seems appropriate. Okay, sorry about that. But that's just what I thought. Okay. Okay, verse 2. So the king had given orders to the officials at the royal gate to honor Haman by kneeling down, but Mordecai wouldn't do it. The ancient worthies, did they bow down to Satan? No. No, to God. Okay, he says, because I'm a Jew, he said. Well, Haman was furious that Mordecai refused to kneel down to him. And so Mordecai wants to kill, he says, knowing that he's a Jew, killing only Mordecai is not enough. Every Jew in the whole kingdom must be killed. What a horrible thing. And they had a year to think about it. You know, it's one thing that, you know, bang, you're dead. But you're going to die, and your loved ones, and all your family and everything, and you got a year to think about it. Man, oh, man. Now, the pastor suggested that would drive those Jews closer to the Lord. You know, when is it that you go to your knees? Is when you got a problem. Well, what about you and all your family and everybody's going to be killed and all your stuff stolen? Of course, it doesn't matter if your stuff is stolen if you're dead, but, you know, this is a pretty bad deal, and they got a whole year to think about it. Well, how did they decide when they were going to kill him? Is they cast lots. They cast the pure, P-U-R. And it came up to the 12th month of Adar. But that's why every year Jews celebrate Purim. That's where it comes from, because they cast lots, they cast the pure. And, you know, Haman goes into the king. He says, you know, these Jews, man, he says, they're all over your kingdom, and they won't have anything to do with anybody else, and you have customs that's different, and they don't want to obey your laws, and, you know, we'd be better off just to be rid of all of them. And so they wrote it, you know, why not give the orders for them all to be killed? Oh, and to spice up the offer, he says, oh, by the way, king, he says, if we do this, I can promise you that when we take all their stuff, we're going to get 300 tons of silver, which is about $200 million by today's standards. Well, the king, he handed Haman the official ring to show the authority. And, you know, I think isn't that like the permission of evil, you know? God permits Satan to have this time, you know, this permission of evil. So he gives him the ring, this permission of evil, for a time. God shall cause the wrath of man to praise him, and the remainder he will restrain. Psalm 76:10. Okay, so on the 13th of Nisan, Haman called the king's secretaries, and they wrote the letters, and they sent it into every language, and they sent it to all the provinces and in their own languages, that all Jewish men, women, and children are to be killed, and their silver and property to be taken. Well, Haman, or Satan, trying to kill the Jews, which included Esther, the church, and take their silver. To me, the verse 9 of Esther 3 seems to indicate that Haman or Satan would take their silver, their truth, and he polluted it with errors. He packaged errors as truth. Esther 3:14, King Xerxes gave orders for these letters to be posted where they could be seen by everyone all over the kingdom. The king's command was obeyed, and the letters were read aloud to the people in the walled city of Susa. Then the king and Haman sat down to drink together, but no one in the city could figure out what was going on. Pastor Earl says they were bewildered. Imagine you're in the kingdom there, and all of a sudden you get the order that every Jewish man, woman, and child is to be killed and their stuff stolen, and the people are going, they were bewildered. It's like, what are you talking about? Now, what does that mean in the antitype? How could a loving God be so evil as to torture billions of people for humanity, for example, those who lived before Jesus' time and who have no chance to know the only name by which they must be saved? That has to be bewildering to people. Or in a more recent example, Hitler, kill all the Jews. Any thinking, loving person, a reasonable person would hear that and go, what? Kill all the Jews? The people were bewildered. Esther 4:1. Then Mordecai, ancient worthies, heard about the letter. He tore his clothes in sorrow, put on sackcloth, covered his head with ashes, and went through the city weeping and crying. But it could only go as far as the palace gate because no one wearing sackcloth was allowed inside the palace. In every province, the king's orders were read. The Jews cried and mourned, and they went without eating. Many of them put on sackcloth and sat in ashes. And the pastor said that experience would draw, which lasted a year, would draw the hearts of the Jews to the Lord. And Esther's servant girls and her servants told her what Mordecai was doing. So she sent out some good duds for him to wear, but he wouldn't put them on. The Jews, see, it was the time of the disfavor to the Jews. It wasn't time yet to rejoice or to put on the glorious garments or any kind of garments other than the sackcloth and ashes. And so she sent out her servant, and then Mordecai sends back a copy of the orders to murder all the Jews. And now she gets it, why he's mourning in sackcloth and ashes. And furthermore, Mordecai says to Esther through the servant, ask her, Esther, to go to the king and beg him to have pity on her people, the Jews. And so he went back to Esther and he told her that. Now, the knowledge that Esther, the church, obtained was from Mordecai, the ancient worthies. This period of mourning and sackcloth and ashes, as we had already said, is a period of disfavor. We, the Esther class, know from the ancient worthies, the Mordecai class, that the mourning period of the Jews would be a double of 1,845 years. Now, how do we know that? From the ancient worthies. Zechariah 9:10, Isaiah 40, verses 1 and 2, 2nd volume 2:24 through 2:28. That's how we know about remember the mission of the folding, the double, the favor, and then equal number of years of disfavor? Okay, so from 33, when Jesus said your house is left on you desolate, till 1878, when favor returned to the Jews, there have been pogroms, attempts to kill the Jews. They've been destroyed, scattered for centuries. Even after her favor began to return, they're still the Jews are still having their troubles, but they're having their favor. And you can see the evidences of the favor because, for example, like Disraeli, 1878, first Jewish prime minister. And what a fluke of history that was, that his parents got ticked off at the leader of the synagogue, so they had him christened as a Christian, even though he was a Jew. And therefore, Disraeli could put his hand on the Bible, Old and New Testament, for the swearing-in ceremony to be a member of Parliament. See, wasn't it the Rothschild? It was what would be like a billionaire today, couldn't be a member of Parliament because he wouldn't put his hand on the New Testament. He says, I'll put my hand on the Old Testament. So here's this super powerful guy, can't be a member of Parliament even. But Disraeli could because his dad got ticked off at the synagogue ruler and had him christened as a Christian. Just strange things. And then, of course, the Cyprus Convention during the Berlin Congress, 1878, all that stuff. Okay, so there are evidences in history that the timing is accurate, this disfavor to the Jews and then a returning favor. Okay, there would be a time when Mordecai, the ancient worthies, would be rewarded, but first Haman or Satan would be bound and destroyed. Esther would receive the fix-it job for the world and delegate the job to her helpers on the ground, the earthly phase. Who's that? Ancient worthies. So you kind of see where we're headed with this. Okay, Esther 4:10. She, Esther, answered, "Tell Mordecai, there is a law about going to see the king, and anyone who goes to him without being invited can be put to death. The only way that anybody can be saved is for the king to hold out his gold scepter to that person." And it's been, and by the way, it's been 30 days since he's called for me. I don't think he's real happy with me right now. And the church or the Esther class are at risk of second death until glorified. When Mordecai was told that Esther said, he sent back a reply. He said, "Don't think that you'll escape being killed, being a Jew and all, just because you live in the king's palace." I mean, if they would kill the king, they'd kill anybody in the palace, right? Or attempt to. "If you don't speak up now, we'll get help. The Jews are going to be helped by God." Mordecai had faith in God. "We'll get help somehow, but you and your family will be killed." And then, I love this statement, it gives me goosebumps. "You have come to a royal position for a time like this." Now think about that. Here you have 1878, the raising of the sleeping saints, vast majority of the churches beyond the veil, already in a royal position, 1878. Concomitant with the time of the return of favor of the Jews in 1878. So now that it's Israel's period of favor again, now she can do something about it. You know, you have to, if Esther is going to help behind the scenes, she has to be able to, number one, have, you know, not be dead anymore, right, raising the sleeping saints. And then number two, you can't help the Jews. You can't show favor to the Jews before the period of disfavor is over, but both of those happen right then. So I love this. When Mordecai says to Esther, "You have come to a royal position for a time like this." And that again is, remember, Disraeli, Prime Minister of England, Cyprus Convention, which was a secret deal cut during the Berlin Congress. You know, Disraeli shuttles off over to Istanbul and cuts this deal and comes back and pull the rug out from under all the superpowers at the Berlin Congress. We have another practical lesson. Pastor also said that our influence is a part of our stewardship that is granted to us, and we must give an account to the Lord. So that's a lesson in this life of Esther here. Esther 4:15. Esther sent a message to Mordecai saying, "Bring together all the Jews in Susa and tell them to go without eating for my sake. Do not eat or drink until the third day. My servant girls and I will do the same, and then I'll go and see the king, and if I perish, I perish." You know, she was only 15 years old. What fortitude and thought for such a youngster. 15 years old. "If I perish, I perish." Gives me goosebumps. Okay, the Esther class, as already stated, is at risk of perishing on this side of the veil. And the Jews did pray in sackcloth and ashes for the 3 days. The fifth, sixth, parts of the fifth, sixth, and seventh thousand-year days, right? Till the third day. From AD 33, your house is left to you desolate, that was in the fifth day, all the way until 1878 when favor returned, which is in the seventh day. Seventh day started in 1874. So they did, in fact, mourn and pray, as it were, for 3 days, till the favor returned to the Jews after the end of their 1845 years of disfavor. And we have a lesson from reprint 3657. We must be faithful even at the risk of losing our lives in the interest of the Lord's people and cause. Mordecai did everything Esther told him to do. Esther chapter 5, verse 1. On the third day, Esther dressed in her royal robes. Remember, the divine nature, raising the sleeping saints, 1878, is something that happened in the third 1,000-year day. Pastor also says, by appearing as attractive as possible, she sought to cooperate with her prayers. Pastor says, some of the Lord's people who trust in the Lord but do nothing to forward the cause they wish to serve, reprint 3657. Or we might say, when you pray for potatoes, pick up a hoe. Okay? It's not just knowing God's will, it's doing it. Know it and do it. And so that's the lesson here, I think. Verse 2, he was happy to see Esther. Xerxes, king, Christ, held out the golden scepter to her. Esther came up and touched the tip of the scepter. The king said, Esther, what brings you here? Just ask and I'll give you as much. Up to half the kingdom. Well, think about it. If you look over here on the chart, you got the earthly phase of the kingdom, okay? And then you have the heavenly phase of the kingdom. So he's going to give her up to half the kingdom. There's the spiritual and there's the earthly. And Esther later receives and delegates the fixing of this earthly half to Mordecai. We'll get into that in a little bit. Esther answered, Your Majesty, please come with Haman to dinner and I'll prepare for you later today. And then they did that. And then he's asking her, okay, I'm at your dinner. Tell me what it is. Well, come to a second dinner the next day. And so he does. Now, pastor says Esther gave a good example of watching and praying, labor and waiting, and or tact. You know, it's not always the right time to say what's on your mind. And so there's a lesson in that. Well, Haman, when he left this dinner, he was feeling great, like Tony the Tiger, right? Because he was special. The only person asked to this thing was the king and him, and he thought he was pretty hot stuff. The problem is, when he left, he noticed Mordecai didn't stand up or show him any respect, so it made him burn with rage. Okay, so then, but Haman gets home, and he calls together his wife, Zeresh, and the friends, and he starts bragging about his great wealth, and he's bragging about his 10 sons, and how the king honored him, and all the other officials and leaders had to respect him, and all this. And he says, and that's not all. He says, not only that, besides the king himself, I'm the only person that Queen Esther invited. He's bragging. And she invited the king and me to dinner again tomorrow. And it reminds me of Isaiah 14, 12 through 14. O Lucifer, thou hast said in thy heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit upon the mount of the congregation on the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. And then Haman says, but none of this makes me happy as long as I see that Jew, Mordecai, sitting in the palace gate. Haman, Satan, hated the Jews. Why? Because they were God's people. Haman's wife and friends said to him, no problem. Have a tower built 75 feet tall and hang Haman or Mordecai from it tomorrow and then go off and have a nice dinner. So he did. He built that tower. Esther chapter 6, verse 1. The king couldn't, oh, this is something. The king couldn't sleep. So he had a servant read him the records of what's been going on in the kingdom. And the servant's reading about how Mordecai kept Bigthana and Teresh from killing him. And the king says, you know, what did we do to reward Mordecai? And nothing, Your Majesty. Now the pastor says, look at the timing of this divine providence. That particular thing out of the tons of records that they would have would come right at that time. And about this time, Haman came in to ask the king to have Mordecai hanged on the tower. And the king says, who's that man hanging out there eyeball on the throne, you know, kind of feeling like, you know, I'm pretty special. Maybe one day I'll be there. And they said, oh, it's Haman's, Your Majesty. Well, have him come in. So Haman comes in. He says, Haman, he says, what should I do to have to honor a man that I want to show honor to? And Haman was sure that it was going to be him that he was going to honor, right? He was feeling pretty good about himself. Oh, Your Majesty, have him bring some of your own royal robes and put on and one of your own horses and have one of the highest officials put the robe on this man and take him throughout the streets saying, this is how the king honors a man. And the king says, well, hurry up and do just exactly what you said and take Mordecai the Jew. He's on duty down at the palace gate. And Haman's like, whoa, wait a minute. Well, you can't argue with the king or off with your head. So he went and did it. He hated it, but he did it. And then he hurries home hiding his face for shame. Reminds me of Luke 14:11. He, for whosoever exalteth himself shall be abased, and he that humbles himself shall be exalted. Well, Haman told his wife and friends what happened, and his wife and advisor said, well, since Mordecai is a Jew, this is just the beginning of your troubles. Oh, the pastor said, he taketh the wise in their own craftiness, Job 5:13. Well, while they were still talking, the king's servants came in and took Haman to the dinner that Esther had prepared. And Esther chapter 7. King and Haman were dining with Esther and drinking wine. And during the second dinner, king says to Esther, Now tell us what it is that you were gonna, that you wanted. Up to half the kingdom, it's yours. Esther answered, "If I have found favor with you, O king, and if it pleases your majesty, grant me my life. This is my petition. Spare me, spare my people. This is my request. For I and my people have been sold for destruction and slaughter and annihilation. If we had merely been sold as male and female slaves, I would have kept quiet because no such distress would justify disturbing the king." "Who would dare do such a thing?" said the king. Esther replied, "The adversary and enemy is this vile Haman." The adversary is Haman. This is why we think that Haman typifies the adversary. Haman was terrified as he looked at the king and queen. The king got up in a rage and he left his wine and he went out in the palace. And Haman realized the king had already decided his fate and he stayed behind and begged Esther to save his life. And just as the king came back in, Haman was falling on the couch where Esther was reclining, and the king shouted, "Now you're even trying to rape my queen here in my own palace?" As soon as the king said this, the servants covered Haman's head, and we think that shows the binding of Satan. It also reminds us that the pastor said that pride causes blindness. They covered his head. They bound him and took him. And Harbona, one of the king's personal servants, said, "Your Majesty, Haman built the tower 75 feet high beside the house so he could have Mordecai hang on it, and Mordecai is the very one that spoke up and saved your life." And the king says, "Hang Haman from his own tower." And right away, Haman was hanged on the gallows that he had built to hang Mordecai. You can't write fiction like this. You can't make this stuff up. I mean, the Lord loves irony. Esther, chapter 8, verse 1. That same day, King Xerxes, a type of Christ, gave Esther everything that had belonged to Haman. He gave Haman, Satan's house, poor fallen humanity under the Adamic curse, he gives that to Esther. Then what does Esther do? Oh, by the way, King, this Mordecai, he's my cousin, he's my kinsman, so they elevate him. They give him Haman's ring, the authority of the king of the kingdom, and Esther gives to Mordecai, ancient worthies, Haman's house, the fallen world of mankind, the earthly phase of the kingdom to administer, exactly like the divine plan, huh? For the first, earlier this morning, we recall that might happen around 2034 from reprint 2310, the Pastor Russell's idea there. And Holy Spirit poured out on all flesh, starting with the ancient worthies, the Mordecai class. And then the king says to Esther something else. She fell at his feet crying and begging, "Please stop Haman's evil plan." And so you remember the story, the account they sent out. King says to Mordecai, "Now write another decree in the king's name on behalf of the Jews. Do as seems best to you. Seal it with the king's signet ring, for no document written in the king's name and sealed with this ring can be revoked." And so they sent out the inverse of it, is that if anybody attacks you, you can kill them and you can take their stuff. The thing is that the Jews didn't do that. You know, there's a reason for that. You know, do we want Satan's, or do the Jews, does anybody want Satan's truth really heirs? They didn't want their stuff because that's not God's plan. So over and over, they had the opportunity to take the heirs, and they said, "No, thank you. No, thank you." Okay, Esther 8, 14 and 15. Then the king ordered the messengers to take the fastest horses and deliver the law as quickly as possible. This inverse thing, Mordecai left wearing royal garments. And I thought, you know, that's kind of a hint that maybe the ancient worthies will get a spiritual elevation. The pastor indicates that. The Jews were no longer afraid, verse 16, and they were happy and felt they had won the victory. Verse 17, in every province and city, wherever the edict of the king went out, there was joy and gladness among the Jews, and feasting and celebrating it. Many peoples of other nationalities became Jews because fear of the Jews had seized them. Many people of other nationalities became Jews. Gentiles becoming Jews in the mediatorial phase of the millennium reminds us of Zechariah 8, 22 and 23. Yea, many people and strong nations shall come to seek the Lord Jehovah. of hosts in Jerusalem and pray before the Lord. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, in those days it shall come to pass that 10 men shall take hold out of all languages of the nations, even shall take hold of the skirt of him that is a Jew, saying, we will go with you, for we have heard that God is with you. Again, this is the divine plan. Isaiah 2, verses 2 through 5. It shall come to pass in those days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established in the top of the mountains and shall be exalted above the hills. All nations shall flow unto it, and many people shall go and say, come ye, and let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, the house of the God of Jacob. So which God? The God of Jacob. And he will teach us of his ways, and we shall walk in his paths, and out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. And he shall judge among the nations, and shall rebuke many people, and they shall beat their swords into plowshares, and their spears into pruning hooks. Nations shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war any more. O house of Jacob, come ye and let us walk in the light of Jehovah. And then what did Jesus say in John 4:22? Salvation is of the Jews. Esther chapter 9. The first law that the king had made was to be followed on the 13th of Adar, the 12th month. This was the very day the enemies of the Jews had hoped to do away with them, but now the tables were turned and the Jews got the upper hand over those that hated them. The Jews assembled in their cities and all the provinces of King Xerxes to attack and those seeking their destruction. Everyone was afraid of the Jews. No one could do anything to oppose them. The leaders of the provinces were afraid of Mordecai and took sides with the Jews. Everyone in the provinces knew the king had promoted him, Mordecai, and given him lots of power. People will learn that God has promoted the ancient worthies, the Mordecai class. The Jews took their swords and did away with their enemies. And the pastor reminds us in Reprint 36:58 that as spiritual Israelites, we're instructed to love our enemies. So if somebody's your enemy, don't whip out your sword and cut their head off. We're supposed to love our enemies, do good to those who hate us and despitefully use us, as Jesus said in Matthew 5:44. That really the heart of this lesson is respecting divine providence. That's what it is. We are to note the providential care over God's typical people, and it increases our faith and trust that God is both able and willing to do as much or more for spiritual Israel. That's the lesson. Reprint 36:58. Now, in Esther 9, verses 6 through 10, and it's repeated, says that Haman's 10 sons were killed. Well, we think that this shows that even the vestiges of the Manasseh system, Christendom, falsely so-called, would be destroyed. It had 10 kings, the 10 toes of Daniel. And basically what that means is you won't even hear about the Trinity and immortality of the soul and the church on the street corner. That stuff would be gone. Not taking their silver, we had already said, is nobody wants Satan's truth or silver. Over and over they had opportunities to do that and they passed on it. Esther 10, verse 2. All the great and famous things that King Xerxes did are written in the records of the kings, record books of the kings of Media and Persia. And these records also tell us about the honors that the king gave to Mordecai. Esther 10:3. Next to the king, Mordecai was the highest official in the kingdom. He was a popular leader of the Jews because he had helped them in many ways, and he would even speak to the king for them. Jacob's ladder. Remember the go-between, the earthly phase and spiritual phase of the kingdom? He'd even talk to him. Jacob's ladder in the future. Notice the inference is that the ancient worthies of Mordecai class would be given even a higher a reward even higher and closer to the Christ than the great company. And that's also suggested in other places, such as, and remember in the positioning of the tribes around the tabernacle, that when the high priest is going in, the Merari, bitterness, great company, is at their right hand. They're the colleagues of the church during the period of sacrifice. But when they turn around and come out and bless the people, now who's at the right hand of the Amram class? Kohath. They're cohorts at that time. That's the ancient worthies. So we think that the ancient worthies will be even closer to the Christ than the great company, Merari, bitterness, at that time. And I think that's indicated here by those two things, the royal garments and also the statement that that no one in the kingdom would be higher, closer to the king than the Mordecai class. Okay, so here's the deal. Let's go back real quick to our handout. And in the last minute, we'll, or no, not the handout, take that back. My page two. Okay, sorry about that. There's a lot of lessons here that we've learned with Esther. Esther's a type of the church. God's providence is for his people, lessons of sacrifice, courage, that the Lord did not despise the Jews that didn't go back to Jerusalem in the time of Cyrus. So if somebody's a little bit slow to do the Lord's will, does that mean the Lord cuts them off? No. No. That's a great blessing there. Lesson of personal accountability, of tact in dealing with life's situations, not casting your pearls before swine, faithfulness under duress, that God loves irony, and the lesson of being content with the lot that the Lord has given you. Like I say, Esther would have rather gone back to the promised land. That's not where she grew up. So wherever you are, that's your lot. The Lord can work with you and will bless you right there in that situation, whatever it is. Lord bless you all.